This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is a Joy 94.9 podcast presented by Paul Anthony with the assistance of the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officers, Victoria Police, Crime Stoppers, and Joy 94.9 working together to make our community safe.
Keeping you and the community informed. Joy 94.9.
Paul Anthony with you. In the studio, we have the GLOW officers, Gabby and Scott. Joining us also is Senior Detective Rosie Kukuljan. Welcome to Joy.
Thanks for having me.
You're in here from the Yarra Criminal Investigations Unit, the CIU. You're the lead investigator into what become commonly reported in the gay press as the oral sex bandit.
That's correct.
First off, what is the Criminal Investigation Unit and what sort of work do you do?
Well, essentially, we're responsible for the investigation of crime. This will include burglaries, assaults, sexual assaults, robberies, stuff like that. There's generally a criteria that is generally met before we are allocated the investigations, but once that criteria has been met, we're left with investigating the specific jobs.
So in most instances, the uniformed police would be the people that attend the scene of the incident in the first instance, and then there'll be determination from there as to whether a criminal investigation unit would be involved. And there's the local criminal investigation units, and Rose is from Yarra, which is at Richmond. Then it might also go to one of the major crime investigations units, you know, so you see all the glamorous things on CSI, like the homicides world.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You've got a great job. You get to get all your makeup done, and you get to sit in those flash offices and stuff like that. But no, that's obviously
and solve the crime in an hour.
Yes. Perhaps you could tell us, Scott, the circumstances of the oral sex bandit.
This particular gentleman was going along to beat locations or public sex locations, and he would offer men oral sex, and then whilst he was performing the act, he would pull the victim's pants down and go through their pockets. And this is generally, it's sort of changed from circumstance to circumstance, but in most instances, it was at a beat location, he'd offer the oral sex, pull the victim's pants down, and whilst he was performing the act, he would go through the pants' pockets, and he would remove items of value from their pockets, so things like wallets, money, and in some instances he would take their car keys and then go on to steal their car. And he actually became quite good at it over a number of years. I first became aware of him in about 2003, and he became quite good at it over the years, and he could get to the point where in some instances he could get the wallet out, get the money out of the wallet, and get the wallet back into the guy's pants, and so they wouldn't know that anything had been taken until sometime later on when they were going to get some money.
That is quite a skill.
Yeah, and from some of the victims, his skill at the sex act wasn't necessarily that good, but I personally think that some of that was to disguise the behaviour of stealing from the pockets.
Gabby, perhaps you could tell us, what do you think he was offending in this way? I mean, he's obviously targeting beat users, but what would be the purpose?
Yeah, well, beat users, we can think of them as vulnerable victims, where the offender would have thought it was an easy way to make money, that the victims would not report the theft to police. And he's rightly so. I mean, beat users often don't want to go to police because they don't want to explain what the circumstances were when the theft was occurring. And also, the offender probably realised that the victims wouldn't even tell family members as well. So it was unlikely that the victims would report this to police or anybody.
Do you think he actually put that much thought into it, or it just so happened?
Yeah, sure, absolutely, because people who use public sex locations, they're doing it quite on the secret. They're not letting anyone else know. They're trying to stay almost invisible. Okay. They don't want to know people that they're going there. So to target people who use public sex locations and beats, it's most likely that they wouldn't report the offence.
We were talking about this off air, is the importance that people should report the offence and the way that the offence actually occurred when they do go into a police station. Because in this instance, what we had was a lot of people had reported that their cars had been stolen, but they didn't actually report the circumstance of them being at a beat and that it occurred from somebody who performing oral sex. In a lot of instances, they used excuses to say that I'd lost my keys, my car was just stolen, and which meant that we weren't able to link them all together. So there's a real importance for people who are victims to explain the full circumstances so that we can do that linking work, which we weren't able to do for a number of years around this particular offender.
Another reason why they may not report is because they think police would charge them for offensive behaviour. That's not what police are interested in doing. We're not interested in that offence in particular. If there's a larger, more serious offence like theft, or even more serious ones with blackmail and things like that, police are interested in investigating them. The offensive behaviour is not a concern at all.
Back to you, Roz. It seems that the Glows were aware of this male and he was a bit of a serial offender, so to speak. How did you become involved?
Well, there was a victim last year who made a report to the police in relation to having his property stolen. And then I was able to link that up with another report of a similar offence. But that victim had also contacted Scott, who in turn contacted my office, and we were able to link them up as being the same offender who committed the offences.
That goes back to 2003.
Some of the offences did go back to 2003, but I picked up the job that I had to investigate initially last year, and that was the first time that I'd become aware of any type of offending like this.
Because my question would have been, how come it's taken us 5 years?
That gets back to the fact that people weren't reporting appropriately. There was a lot of... they weren't providing the full details, so that's why it took us so long. We were aware of him in 2003, and we did some work back in 2003 to attempt to identify him, and we used some of the gay licensed premises and sex on premises venues out through the Collingwood area. And we did get some information that came back at the time, but it wasn't sufficient enough for us to be able to identify who the offender was at that time. But it certainly started to lead us down the right track, as we found out, once Rose was able to do some of her investigative work.
So what sort of assistance did the gay venues provide then?
It was outstanding. Myself and the gay and lesbian liaison officer who was in Gabby's role back then, Steve Robertson, went along to each of the venues. We produced a poster. It was basically explaining that we were looking for a particular person and the circumstances as we've already described. And every venue were concerned for their patrons because they were potential to be a victim of this guy. So all of the posters were put up, and not only did they put the posters up, but they also had the discussions with lots of their patrons about this particular offender. And we know that because of that work, we had a number of victims contact Rose and myself, and they were the people that we were able to get statements off and get to court and be able to have this offender convicted at court.
Let's get into how you went about identifying the offender. Scott said earlier that you made a previous attempt to identify. What happened this time?
Just in relation to the investigation that I had, we were able to obtain some forensic evidence from one of the victims, and that allowed us to identify a viable suspect. We were then able to fully investigate. And once we realised we'd had two almost identical complaints with a viable suspect to look at, we set about getting other victims to come forward. Scott discussed how we went about doing that with the assistance of the various sex on premises
venues and the licensed premises, yeah.
A number of other victims come forward, and we're able to match the similarities of the cases. The description of the offender was always the same. The location of the offending, that helped us with, as well as the times and the target that the offender selected, the various targets. We then sort of began a larger scale investigation in relation to this suspect that we had. And once we were assured that we were on the right track, we then set about fully investigating this particular person.
So how does one go about putting together a case against this male?
There's different ways that we can go about assisting us to prove that we've got the right person, because we have to obviously convince a court beyond reasonable doubt that the person that we have charged is the person that's committed the offence.
And of course you've got to know who he is before you can charge him, can't you?
Yep. That's right. We compile a brief of evidence, and contained in that brief of evidence should be sufficient evidence to convict the offender, and that's what our goal was from the very start.
So give me an example on how you would go about catching such an offender.
One of the ways that we went about trying to catch this particular person was we utilised surveillance on him, and through that we were able to keep him under observation. He went to a couple of gay beats as well as the sex on business premises. We were able to observe him meeting up with other potential victims. And initially, we'd approach these victims afterwards, but they wouldn't speak with us once we'd identified ourselves as police. So then I went to Scott and sought some assistance from Scott. That proved very worthwhile.
When you approached these victims, had they known that their keys and wallets and whatever else had gone?
That was what we were trying to establish, but they wouldn't speak to us.
They wouldn't speak to you. How important is it to catch him in the act, I guess?
It just helps us, you know, because it's the best evidence possible, observing someone commit the particular type of offence, and that's quite obvious, I would think, as to why that's useful.
Was it easy to catch him in the act?
No, of course not. No, it's never easy to catch anybody in that.
Okay, so it proved a little bit harder than it should. How did you go about catching him in that?
Well, we continued on with, obviously, the surveillance. And what we did get from that was valuable intelligence that was certainly on the right track with the particular offender. We utilised Scott to assist us as well, and then we ended up getting to a point where we decided that we needed to speak with the suspect, and once he was formally interviewed, he actually made full admissions in relation to the incident.
Well, that saved you a lot of time.
Well, no, it took us, that was the last stage that we got to.
I suppose at this particular point, it's important to understand how much police resources actually went into this investigation, because I spent, I think, 3 or 4 nights with you guys, and you'd done another couple prior to that, and that was with surveillance teams. So those 6 or so nights, there were about 8 police out there attempting to catch this guy in the act. Now, I know that that sounds like we failed in catching him in the act, but it actually provided us with really vital information about the way that he conducted himself and enabled us to use that into putting into our brief of evidence. So it was actually really vital. And I know the first night when we had our surveillance team up and running, he didn't do what he normally did, which he'd done the first night I became involved, but he hadn't done what he previously did. And he ended up driving up all over the place, and we were a bit worried at one point that he might be onto our surveillance team. And he ended up in Broadmeadows, and we were all sort of sitting there running from the Melways trying to figure out what actually happened. It was only when I sort of looked at the Melways and realised that he was heading towards another beat in Broadmeadows. So it became clear that he wasn't just operating within the city of Yarra, but he was operating from a number of different beats, although our focus at this point was on that Fitzroy Gardens area.
But also part of the investigation was identifying other victims who come forward, and there was a period of time there that it took to get all of these people to feel comfortable, and we ended up with about 20 people that ended up approaching police and making statements, and 13 of those we were able to directly link to this particular person that we were investigating. So that all takes time, and we glean information from every person that we speak with.
Bottom line, though, your surveillance didn't work.
No, it did. If we didn't do that, there is no way in the world that we'd satisfy ourselves that we were looking at the right person. We got some extremely valuable information from doing it.
You just brought him in for questioning, didn't you?
Yeah, so. But we also had the forensic evidence that we got very first. So all of those things put together.
And the likeness between all of the different offences. So.
All right. To close it off, what happened in court?
Well, he pleaded guilty, which was a great result, particularly for the victims who weren't then compelled to come to court to give evidence in court. And he was convicted and given an 8-month intensive correction order. An order that he has to attend. Well, it's managed by the Office of Corrections, and the Office of Corrections puts conditions on him that he has agreed to meet, and this would probably include things like urine testing to ensure that he's, if he had a drug problem, that he's not taking drugs. If they believe that he should undergo some sort of psychological treatment, they can. Part of the order is that he goes to appointments that they set up for him. It could also have various other conditions, depending on what the assessment made originally would ask that he do. And it's all managed by the Office of Corrections, and he's compelled by the court to fulfil those obligations.
Am I allowed to ask whether he was straight or gay?
You can ask.
Was he straight or gay?
He claimed he wasn't gay.
And assuming he's being honest in that respect, he's gone to great lengths to do that. It seems like a whole extreme setup.
I suppose it gets back to that conversation that we're having with Gabby, is that he had a need to get money, and that in his view, I'm assuming a lot here, but I would assume that in his view, he sees this as an easy target to make money. And I certainly know that in some instances, he pulled $500 or $600 out of people's wallets in some instances.
Very lucrative for him.
He was doing it for a number of years and not caught, so he was successful in it for a long time.
And tax-free.
Exactly.
As well.
And we certainly know from our surveillance that he was operating Thursday nights, Friday nights, Saturday nights. We followed him over 6 particular weekends. He was operating every one of those weekends, except one when the temperature was about 40 degrees, one of those really hot nights back in January.
He took a night off.
Yeah. So he was operating quite regularly, and we've managed to get 13 people to provide statements. We really think that there were probably a number of other victims who just didn't come forward.
Is it too late for victims to come forward now if they're tuning in at the moment?
For this particular investigation, yes, because it's finalised, but we certainly do encourage victims to come forward under any circumstances to report any offence.
Okay, now talking about this is great, but is it likely to create any copycat situations? Are you guys more on the ball now if something like this was to happen?
Look, we certainly know that even through this investigation that this was what we call an MO or a modus operandi that's already been used by a number of other people. So it's certainly something that people are already doing, but we certainly wouldn't be encouraging other people to copycat it, because Victoria Police has matured as an organisation, and in the past people were getting away with it because people weren't reporting it. We're now encouraging people to report, and we will actively investigate it.
on that thing, the victims actually have to be honest when they make the report and don't just say, my wallet was stolen, without fully explaining the circumstances of that theft. Because if we don't know that, then we're limited in how far we can investigate it.
Stepping back from it all and having a look, you could say, and you would say, and it's a fact, that Victoria Police have gone to considerable lengths to catch this offender. You had surveillance teams, you had a number of nights, must have been costly, quite time-consuming as well. And it seems to me there's been a bit of a change in attitude, I guess, with Victoria Police and beats.
I would say it's not something that's new, that change in the attitude within Victoria Police, that it's something that has happened over the last 5, 6, 7 years. Certainly from a gay and lesbian liaison perspective, we've had GLOWs since 2000. So we're coming on 10 years now of having GLOWs. So Victoria Police has certainly matured as an organisation. It's not unfair to say that previously, if people had gone to a police station to report crimes from a beat location, that they probably would have been told to go away and that it was their fault for being there in the first place. That has changed, and now people will go into a police station and 9 times out of 10 they'll get an appropriate service from police, and if they don't, there's mechanisms in place to be able to address that.
Does the GLOWs actually have a certain number that people can call in relation, or do they need to call the police first?
In an emergency, people should always ring 000.
Yep.
If it's an after the fact, after the incident has occurred, if people want to ring, they can ring my number, which is 92476944. You can ring the switchboard at the Victoria Police Centre, which is 92476666, and they can give you the phone numbers for the GLOWs in your local area. If you've got access to the internet, and pretty much everyone does nowadays, the Victoria Police website has an updated list of our gay and lesbian liaison officers across the state. We've got 20 of those, and I update that on a regular basis because we do get changes. So people can find out who their local GLOW is there, and that's based on the local government area, the council area that they live in.
Fantastic. Anything closing before we let you go?
Thanks for the opportunity to talk about it, and I'd really like to thank Rose for coming in, because it is important for people to understand that Victoria Police is changing it, and we really do encourage people who are victims of crime to report it. But as Rose said, that they report it honestly, that we will listen and we will act, and if we don't, then there's ways to redress that, and people can contact me and we can talk about that.
Gabby?
Just thanks for listening.
Well, Rose, we'll finish off with you. How important has the gay and lesbian liaison officers been for you guys down at the CIU?
In this particular investigation, I don't think I would have been able to solve it without their assistance, particularly in getting victims to come forward and victims to cooperate with us.
So the GLOWs are here to stay.
We are.
Where would we go?
Here. You can come here every week. Oh, you do anyway. Rose, thank you so much for coming in and spending your time.
You're welcome.
Scotty and Gabby, we'll see you next week.
Thanks.
Ever wanted to leap tall buildings, uphold the law, solve a crime, but just don't have the time? Tune in to the Thursday afternoon show on Joy 94.9 when Victorian Police gay and lesbian liaison officers Gabby and Scott ask for your help in solving crime. Victorian Police GLOWs, Crime Stoppers and Joy 94.9 working to make our community safe.
If you have any knowledge concerning any crime, call Crime Stoppers on 1800 333 000 or visit crimestoppers.com.au.
If it's an emergency, always call 000.
The Victoria Police GLOWs, Crime Stoppers and Joy 94.9, working together to help make our community safe.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.